Welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, July 25th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's get started with the front page stories. Eastbrook residents place hope in city flood mitigation efforts by Jared McNett. In the past few years, Mason City resident Lerald Robinette estimates that his home in the town's Eastbrook neighborhood has had more than 2 feet of water get in from downpours. When asked whether or not ongoing stormwater mitigation by the city and Henkel Construction will help lessen or eliminate future damage from heavy rains, Robinette's answer was 6 words. "I hope to hell it does," Robinette said. The mitigation work, which is approved by the City Council in April, and is projected to cost at least $389,000, involves shaping a diversion ditch for stormwater and then placing a bridge over the ditch that will tie into segments of the NIACC trail, according to Mason City engineer Mark Rom. This project is to intercept water that had been flowing across the field out there and through the neighborhoods washing debris in, Rom said. This project will intercept that water and carry it directly to Ideal Creek. It will prevent neighborhoods from being overtaken by water flowing across fields. The project was targeted by the city after flooding in June 2018, when some area residents got as much as 8 inches of rainwater in their basements. At that time, Patty Dunn of the River Run subdivision said, "There was so much water pressure coming up from our backyard that a railroad tie went through the window." In 2016 and 2008, the area also dealt with major downpour concerns. During the 2008 flood, several residents could actually be seen canoeing in the area. Linda Giese, who's lived in Eastbrook since 2015, said that when the project was still in the planning stages, she actually sat in on an online meeting with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. She didn't get to have any input, but said she doesn't really have any concerns with the work. "It's great. I think it's going to alleviate our water problem," Giese said. A nearby resident named Mary said that her home doesn't have a basement, so her water problem isn't quite the same, but she's still hoping that the stormwater mitigation works out for the best. "When a downpour comes, it's scary," Mary said. On Thursday afternoon, no work was happening at the diversion ditch, though Rom has said there's still plenty that needs to happen before the project is complete. A big item to check off the list is the bridge. Per Rom, a prefabricated structure should be coming sometime in August to span the gap created by the ditch and tie the NIACC trail together. Rom said that he hopes everything is done by September. That hinges on the bridge manufacturer. "Everything seems to be taking longer with the materials," Rom said. Down the line, Rom said he anticipates city officials having to address stormwater issues with a twin box culvert on South Virginia Avenue and in an area north of the downtown district around about 9th Street. With these more heavy rain events, those storm sewer pipes don't have the capacity to get that away fast enough, so we do want to take a look as a city to see what is in the system," Rom said. By doing so, Rom said that the city could well avoid future headaches with flooding. That's always the goal and intent, to make these improvements to mitigate some of the issues we see, he said. Wave of foreclosures not anticipated in Iowa as moratorium expires. Bankers say area won't see wave of foreclosures. As the federal moratorium on housing foreclosures comes to an end, lenders and financial counselors do not see a tsunami of foreclosures in Iowa. In fact, some say their worst fears about impact of the coronavirus pandemic on mortgage delinquencies and potential foreclosures have not been realized. The minimum concern over the end of the federal moratorium held true for banks in North Iowa. Robert Clocky, the chief credit officer for First Citizens Bank in Mason City, described the upcoming end to the moratorium as a likely non-event for us. Cheryl Kurtzleben, the vice president for real estate lending for Clear Lake Bank and Trust, echoed the sentiments made by Clocky. "Honestly, it's not going to have a big impact on us," Kurtzleben said. "We just don't see a lot of foreclosures in this area. We've actually been experiencing a decrease in our mortgage delinquency in the last 12 months in comparison to the previous 12 months," said Christina Christensen, account resolution manager for Viridian Credit Union, which has 30 offices in Iowa and eastern Nebraska. "That's a bit of a surprise coming off a pandemic." Lenders and agencies working to prevent foreclosure attribute that to prompt action by creditors to work with borrowers, including deferring payments and waiving fees, and halting residential foreclosure actions and evictions. The $55 billion in CARES Act and American Rescue Plan funds to help tenants, landlords, and lenders have and will help going forward, they said. The Iowa Ethic of Responsibility also has helped Iowa delinquency numbers stay lower than national averages, which probably speaks to our part of the country, the demographic of who's living here, said a spokeswoman for the Iowa Bankers Mortgage Corp. Nationwide, there were nearly 11,000 properties with foreclosure filings in May, according to ATTOM, a nationwide real estate data analytics firm. That was down 8% from the previous month, but 23% higher than a year earlier. In 2019, foreclosure filings fell to a record low of 493,000. That's 0.36% of all housing units in the United States. That was down 21% from 2018, and a decline of 83% from a peak of nearly 2.9 million in 2010 to the lowest level since tracking began in 2005. However, for a variety of pandemic-related reasons, there are Iowans facing the possibility of foreclosure when the moratorium expires July 31st. Horizons, a family service alliance in Cedar Rapids, is seeking to hire an additional financial counselor to deal with dozens of new clients, said Kelsey Bedwell, Director of Financial Stability. The Family Services Agency is a U.S. Housing and Urban Development certified housing counselor and partners with the Iowa Finance Authority to help homeowners. People are feeling that uneasiness about the future of their financial situation with those moratoriums and different protections coming to an end, Bedwell said. For those working on foreclosure prevention, it's kind of like everyone in the industry has been kind of holding our breath, waiting for this influx of applications, and it just hasn't come so far, added Ashley Jarrett of the Iowa Finance Authority that administers a homeowner foreclosure prevention program. That could change as we move forward and really start to see the impact of the pandemic, Viridian's Christensen said. We definitely could start to see that spike in delinquency and foreclosures increase. We just haven't at this point. According to the Iowa Mortgage Bankers Association, past due loans in Iowa increased from 3.3% in 2018 to 5.3% in 2020, and seriously delinquent past due 90 days or more increased from 1.6% to 3.4%. Most of those Horizons is working with have lost their jobs or are working fewer hours because of the pandemic, Bedwell said. In some cases, jobs disappeared. In another instance, people who lost one job started another, but have not regained firm financial footing. We see people who were unable to return to work for one reason or another, Bedwell said. It could be long-term COVID effects for them or a family member. We've also seen some mothers who, due to the burden of child care and costs and things like that, are unable to return to work. While there's no typical case, most involve middle to lower income homeowners, many who have been in their homes 5 to 10 years, Christensen and Bedwell said. Iowa has received $50 million in federal coronavirus pandemic relief funds to help tenants, landlords, and lenders. So far, the state has provided more than $2 million in assistance to homeowners. Qualifying applicants could receive 4 months of mortgage assistance, up to $3,600. Veridian has offered more than 1,000 loan extensions, Christensen said. From early on, she added, Veridian changed how it communicated to be more proactive, reaching members after a payment is missed, so we could really partner with them as soon as possible to find a solution. When we realized that this wasn't going to be so much of a temporary solution, that it could be more of a long-term solution, that's when we really became intentional about our communication approach, Christensen said. At Horizon, the goal is to help people from going backward financially, Bedwell said. When a person loses their home or faces foreclosure, you just see this large widespread domino effect that not only affects the person losing the home, but it affects their children, the community around them, and those who know and care about them. Local United Way short $700 in Give a Little Soul Shoe Drive. The United Way of North Iowa is making one final push for its Give a Little Soul Shoe Drive. Give a Little Soul aims to purchase new shoes for children in North Iowa who may not be able to afford them otherwise before the start of school next month. Currently, the United Way of North Central Iowa is behind on its $2,000 funding goal by just over $700, but they are optimistic that they can hit the goal before the end of the fundraising event. To donate, text KIDSHOES to 44321 or visit the United Way of North Central Iowa's donation page. NIACC makes progress on solar project. North Iowa Area Community College's solar project is almost fully functional. There are still some details that need to be straightened out, according to NIACC President Stephen Schultz. I will be fully happy when it is fully functional, Schultz said. Schultz added that he was pleased with some of the additional results, but the school isn't ready to share what it's saving yet on utilities. Progress on its production numbers will be known 3 months down the road, according to Schultz. NIACC's solar project was a collaboration between the college and a private investor, utilizing solar tax credits to build the initial infrastructure. The college will purchase the solar arrays from the investor in 5 years. Schultz said the project is a socially responsible investment and underscores the college's ongoing commitment to sustainability. The energy savings estimates for the project was predicted to be $392,200 a year, or 58% of the campus's current consumption. The NIACC project utilizes 5,800 bifacial modules. These modules have solar cells on both sides, enabling the panels to absorb light from the back as well as the front compared to traditional solar panels. Bifacial modules yield up to 11% more energy than traditional solar panels in a ground-mounted installation and up to 7% more energy in a roof-mounted installation. The solar arrays have been installed near Campus View student housing southwest of McAllister Hall, west of the facilities building, east of the rec center, and at the campus farm. 4 rooftop arrays have been installed on the administration building, activity center, auditorium, and the campus farm. NIACC held a groundbreaking back in late September to celebrate the construction of one of the largest solar arrays at a community college in the nation. The project was predicted to reduce campus energy costs by approximately $10.7 million over the next 25 years. North Iowa study monitors blending turtles. Following decades of silence, Iowa's most secretive reptiles are currently emitting radio signals from the watery depths of Eagle Lake. 12 hours on and 12 hours off, the daily transmissions are being closely monitored by a team of wildlife diversity experts with the Iowa DNR. The rapidly accumulating data is contributing to a first-of-its-kind project aimed at enabling researchers to stall the ongoing decline of the iconic Blanding's turtle, one of the state's most interesting but rarely observed forms of native wildlife. Located in Hancock County, the 900-acre Eagle Lake Wildlife Area is one of a declining number of Iowa wetlands still harboring a viable population of this threatened species. Blanding's turtles are extremely secretive, says DNR wildlife research technician Dave Hoffman. Since we can't rely on visual sightings, the use of radio telemetry is our best way to gain knowledge of this declining species. Programmed to operate in 12-hour cycles, our transmitters have an estimated lifespan of 9 years. We hope to learn a lot of things from this study, things like habitat use during spring and summer, habitat use during winter hibernation, or how migrating females select upland nesting sites. One of the most important questions is why there are virtually no young turtles being added to existing populations. DNR wildlifers are employing underwater baited cage traps to obtain samples of Eagle Lake's most elusive species. But while the public wildlife area continues to support hundreds of painted and snapping turtles, Blanding's turtles have become alarmingly scarce. In an area where the unique reptiles were once common, researchers have only succeeded in capturing 3 male and 1 female Blanding's so far this summer. After being equipped with the long-lived gluon transmitters, the turtles were released to begin sharing their secrets. 2 additional Blandings, 1 male and 1 female, were also captured, marked, and released at the Ventura Marsh at Clear Lake. During the past 3 years, there have also been single sightings of Blanding's turtles at Cerro Gordo County's Zerbel Slough and Mallard Marsh. At least 2 Blandings have also been documented at the DNR's Wild Goose Marsh Wildlife Area, located 4 miles north of Ventura. One of the things researchers hope to learn at Eagle Lake is what types of habitats are the most seasonally preferred by Blandings, said Hoffman. Radioed turtles have currently concentrated in a location known to area duck hunters as the Burnout, an area containing shallow, crystal-clear water with an abundant combination of both emergent and submergent aquatic plant life. We're also examining the overall importance of varying water depths, said Hoffman. We are especially interested in learning how wetland drawdowns, either through intentional management events or natural droughts, might impact turtle survival. Regardless of existing water levels, biologists note that the spring and summer breeding season is a dangerous time for all turtle species, as pregnant females leave wetlands to search for upland nesting sites. For Blanding's turtles, vehicle strikes represent the highest known cause of adult mortality. When digital x-rays revealed that the Eagle Lake female was holding a clutch of 19 eggs, the turtle was medically induced to lay her eggs. Those eggs are currently being incubated by Jeffrey Templin, a University of Northern Iowa professor, who is also currently working with the endangered Iowa wood turtle. A turtle's gender is largely determined by the temperature of developing eggs. Moderate temperatures produce males, while temperatures rising above 80 degrees result in female hatchlings. Utilizing precise temperature control, Templin has engineered the Eagle Lake eggs to produce an all-female hatch. Because of an increased incidence of road mortality, females are considered to be the most valuable members of Blanding's populations. In extreme cases, the loss of a single female has the potential to doom the entire population of an isolated marshland. Once the Eagle Lake eggs hatch, biologists hope to increase survival by raising hatchlings to a larger size before returning the adolescent turtles to their wetland home. A similar rearing program is helping to stabilize endangered Blanding's populations in nearby Illinois. Actress Tana Frederick to speak in leadership series by Zachary DuPont. The Mason City Chamber of Commerce will play host to actress and Mason City native Tana Frederick as part of its Breaking Glass Leadership Series. Hosted monthly by the Mason City Chamber of Commerce, the Breaking Glass Leadership Series aims to help shine a light on women with leadership potential and give them the opportunity to speak with successful women from a wide range of professions and backgrounds. The Breaking Glass Leadership Series has already hosted Republican Senator Joni Ernst, Iowa Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Julie Kenney, competitive weightlifters Annie Breeze and Abby Mock, and others. Frederick has been acting in films since 2003, with 23 credits to her name on IMDb. Arguably, Frederick's most notable role came in the film Hollywood Dreams, where she was given the Best Actress Award at the 2008 Fargo Film Festival. July's Breaking Glass Leadership Series will take place at 8:30 a.m. on Thursday, July 29th, at the North Iowa Regional Commerce Center. Tickets for the event start at $10 for Chamber of Commerce members and $20 for non-members. RSVP volunteers honored for service. Volunteers throughout North Central Iowa were honored for their cumulative years of service to their communities during RSVP's annual volunteer celebration on June 9th with a parking lot party on the NIACC campus. RSVP of North Central Iowa staff presented 29 outstanding volunteer awards to individuals who volunteered in the six counties that RSVP serves: Cerro Gordo, Franklin, Hancock, Mitchell, Winnebago, and Worth. The volunteers honored serve in a variety of programs such as reading buddies and reading coaches, helping elementary and middle school students improve their reading skills, pen pals, writing letters to fourth through sixth graders, breakfast buddies, visiting with students at school-sponsored breakfast, international friends, making NIACC's international students feel at home in Iowa, helping with registrations at American Red Cross blood drives, and reading to the blind on KCMR radio. This year, RSVP volunteers also made an impact in new ways, including sewing masks, sending cards to frontline workers and educators, working as contact tracers, and assisting with vaccine clinics. Outstanding volunteer awards were presented by RSVP staff based on the following levels of lifetime service: Gold Award, which is 500 plus hours, Virginia Bauman, Karen Dole, and Kathy Homan of Mason City, and Joanne Andrea of Manly. Additional RSVP volunteers recognized for reaching a lifetime award level include the Silver Award, which is 250 to 499 hours, Clear Lake, Karen Flick, Mason City, Midge Gaylor, Julie Thurin-Birkdahl, Audrey Wolf, Kay Erland, Gwen Sundkin, Rockwell, Lana Schaefer, Manly, Marilyn Pinta, Forest City, Barb Braun. The bronze level is 100 to 249 hours, and these people were honored: Sheffield, Nikki Baker, Mason City, Alan Steckman, Don Gettner, Larry Coleman, Colleen Last, and Amy Dodge. Clear Lake, Carol Mandel, Nikki Burge, Star Barnes, David Burgart, and Craig Rule. From Britt, Catherine Smith. Also recognized were retiring members of the RSVP Advisory Council: Kimberly Booth of Hampton, Karen Dole and Carol Johnson of Mason City, Larry Hill of Thompson, and Bob Perry of Northwood. For more information on RSVP of North Central Iowa, visit their website or call 1-888-466-422. Names in the news. Clear Lake Bank hires two new employees, promotes one. Tyler Bigler and Emily Lemon have been hired at Clear Lake Bank and Trust. Danielle Pace has been promoted. Bigler began her role as a teller in Teller Operations Department and is based in our Mason City downtown location. A University of Northern Iowa graduate, Bigler comes to CLBNT with experience in retail management. Taylor is a native of Mason City. Lemon also joined our team as a teller and works in our Garner location. Lemon joins CLBNT with experience in banking as a head teller. Danielle Pace has been promoted to Vice President, Director of Retail Banking and Consumer Lending. Pace is located at the Mason City West location. She joined CLBNT as a retail branch manager in the Mason City West location in 2015 and has 14 years of banking experience in retail, consumer lending, and management. In 2018, she was promoted to Vice President of Consumer Lending. Clear Lake Bank and Trust Company is a locally owned full-service bank with four offices in Clear Lake, Garner, and Mason City. Lamont Financial Group hires Amy Dixon. Amy Dixon, a wealth advisor, has joined the team at Lamont Financial Group, an investment center within Clear Lake Bank and Trust. Dixon is a native of Mason City and a graduate of AIB College of Business, where she double majored in finance and business administration. Founded in 1934, Clear Lake Bank and Trust Company is a locally owned full-service bank with four offices in Clear Lake, Garner, and Mason City. Papa John hosts Youth Startup Academy. The North Iowa Area Community College, Papa John SBDC, conducted the Youth Entrepreneurship Academy on June 14th through 18th, sponsored by John K. and Louise V. Hansen Foundation. The Academy offered annually and free to all high school students interested in entrepreneurship. Participants receive a $500 NIACC scholarship sponsored by John Papa John. This year's Academy included 12 high school students. The aspiring entrepreneurs completed the Academy, which is held as a day camp from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. The participants work to progress a business model canvas. Students had the opportunity to network with local entrepreneurs, develop leadership skills, and gain fundamental skills required when starting a business. On June 22nd, the students pitched their business ideas by submitting an executive summary that included a company description, financial plans, and business model key measures that included startup costs and sales projections. Additionally, five students received a $500 seed money award for the businesses they developed during the week. The judges chose five businesses to win an additional $500 seed money award. The winners were Shelley Dreyer, NIS, a personal shopping service that helps the homebound and busy individuals living in small communities. By using phone calls and texting, customized shopping is provided in the Britt and Kanawha communities. Christopher Molander, Molander Magic, an entertainment service. Christopher is a magician providing a magical experience at birthday parties, events, and special occasions. Chase Potter, Clean Club, is a golf club and cart cleaning service that allows golf course members to spend more time with their family in a beautiful clean cart. Christian Rodriguez, A Cut Above, Lawn and Landscapes, is a lawn maintenance and decorative landscape company offering a wide selection of services within the care, landscape, and hauling aspect of our industry. And Marlene Vargas Vasquez, El Mercadito Hispano is a retail marketplace helping the North Iowa Hispanic communities and others who want to purchase authentic Hispanic products and merchandise such as vegetables, herbs, snacks, and drinks. Well, we've reached the halfway point. You're listening to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, July 25th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Gloria J. Helgeson, January 16, 1945 to November 26, 2020. We are celebrating the life of Gloria Helgeson. Please join us on July 31st for an open house from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Helgeson Farm, located at 3952 Kildare Avenue in Kinston, Iowa, as we gather together to share remembrances of Gloria through her years of love and services to her family, her friends, her church, her 4-H girls, the Relay for Life, and her community. The family kindly requests no cards or gifts, please. Leroy J. Knutson, June 15, 1925 to July 9th. Leroy J. Knutson, age 96, of Mason City, passed away Friday, July 9th at the IOOF home in Mason City. A memorial service will be held 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 28th at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street in Mason City. Interment will be at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City, where military honors will be presented by the Mason City veterans. The family will greet friends and relatives from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday evening, July 27th, at the funeral chapel. Christopher M. Vega, age 50, of Mason City, passed away suddenly July 20th. Care of the family has been entrusted to Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel in Mason City. Judith Irene McCall Bond, September 20th, 1938, to July 8th, Judith McCall Bond, age 82, of Brooklyn Park, passed away peacefully on July 8th, 2021. Judy was born to Emil and Irma Bond in Mason City. Following graduation from Mason City High School, Judy earned a B.S. degree in home economics education from Iowa State University. While attending summer school at the University of Colorado in Boulder, Judy met Edward Ned McCall, and both were graduated from Iowa State. They were married and just celebrated their 60th wedding anniversary in 2020. Judy was a devoted wife and mother, and later in life worked for the University of Minnesota Bookstores for 17 years. She loved to spend time with her family and travel on many vacations and trips throughout the U.S. and Europe. Judy loved to read, write thank you notes with her flawless handwriting, give presents, make gingerbread Christmas cookies, and attend events her children and grandchildren participated in. Judy was an active member of First Youth Lutheran Church in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. In lieu of flowers, please send memorials to the Alzheimer's Association. Marie Farmakis, March 31, 1927 to July 18th. Marie Farmakis, age 94, of Dayton, Ohio, but formerly of Mason City, passed away on Sunday, July 18th. Marie was born to the late James and Helen LaLucie Farmakis on March 31, 1927, in Mason City. She was a member of the Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church. Marie graduated from Mason City High School before moving to New York, to pursue her career in entertainment. She performed on Broadway professionally as a singer and dancer. In later years, she resided in Fresno, California with her sisters before moving to Dayton with her sister Evelyn. Mary loved traveling to Europe, especially Greece. In lieu of flowers, donations may be sent to St. George Greek Orthodox Church, 2219 North Orchard Street in Fresno, California. Dora M. Schrag. Funeral services for Dora M. Schrag, age 84, of Marble Rock, will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, July 26th, at the Walter F. Bull Community Center in Marble Rock with Reverend Robert Schurer of St. Paul Lutheran Church, Marble Rock, officiating. Burial will be at the Westside Cemetery in Marble Rock. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Monday, July 26th at the Community Center in Marble Rock. Dora passed away on July 22nd at the Rockwell Community Nursing Home in Rockwell. Memorials may be directed to the family at P.O. Box 7, Marble Rock, Iowa, 50653. Arrangements are in the care of Rhett's Funeral Home in Marble Rock. And that concludes today's obituaries. Back to a feature article. We saw so much potential in family project. LeMay family runs new Mainline Depot and Inn in Kanawha. The owners of the Mainline Depot and Mainline Inn want to help revitalize Kanawha. Kanawha's former Old Bank Winery and Inn has recently reopened as the Mainline Depot and Mainline Inn under the new ownership of its proprietor, Kathy LeMay, and the help of her husband, Matthew LeMay, and other family members. It is our desire to revitalize our rural little town and to draw people together as a community, Kathy LeMay said. We are really interested because one of my daughter's interests is in the community. We saw so much potential that we bought it and brought in our married daughter and her husband as well. It's a family project and business. Kathy and her high school sweetheart, Matthew, have been married for 32 years. They have 8 children and 11 grandchildren. Matthew has owned and operated Priority Electric LLC in Kanawha since their family sought to leave Houston, Texas in 2017 to give their children a quieter country lifestyle. They also chose North Central Iowa to be near their son-in-law and daughter, Ben and Emily Neiman. Nancy and David Litch announced in April that they had sold the Old Bank Winery and Inn business. They kept and maintained their vineyards, located on a family farm 2 miles south of Kanawha, for harvesting and distribution to other wineries. With the name Mainline Depot, we thought we'd give a history, a nod to the history of trains going through Kanawha, LeMay said. It's where tracks converged. Similarly, this will be a one-stop place for accommodations, food, and social events. It may take a while for the full vision to come to pass. The room has 2 rooms presently being rented to mostly travelers in town for varying lengths of time. One room has already been painted and renovated with new flooring, granite countertops, a new antique chandelier, and basically everything in the guest space, according to LeMay. The other room being used has been painted and well cleaned and maintained, and is next on the list to be refurbished. In the longer term, LeMay has plans for another large suite, a smaller suite, and a guest laundry area. She noted that the suites have full kitchens, which works well for extended guest stays. I have not advertised, and I've had a steady flow of guests, LeMay said. Most of them come from local referrals to people who are coming to town and need a place to stay. Though busy with his electric business, LeMay said Matthew will oversee the next project at the Mainline Depot, which will be an ice cream parlor operating from the former bank drive-up area. It will be called Polar Express Ice Cream, to continue the train theme, and will feature Iowa-made old-fashioned hard ice cream, LeMay said. It will operate seasonally, probably from around Memorial Day to Labor Day, also offering ice cream sundaes and milkshakes. She said they hope to have the ice cream parlor open by spring 2022. Also in the works will be a cafe, coffee shop, and small retail space in the lobby area of the former bank building. Not maintaining the winery space in the building, the LeMays will also be clearing space in the existing kitchen and warehouse space. They plan to use the cellar that housed winery equipment as pantry space. It will be called the Crossing Cafe. The old bank building has about 10,000 square feet of space to utilize for the plans, including the cellar. LeMay says she has a wide array of early 1900s train memorabilia and decor that she has been collecting through online auctions and wherever she comes across it, for use as the family's vision for the mainline depot emerges. One of the hardest things has been wanting to get all of this off the ground, but not being able to tell people exactly when, LeMay said. Right now, it is entirely a family-run business. We will probably have to hire outside of the family once the cafe is up and running. Daughter Leanna LeMay is 16 and is a strong developing business sense, according to her mom. LeMay said she is eager to learn all aspects of business operations at the inn. She is primarily working in customer service and helping to run the inn. Another daughter, Linda, is 14. Her mother said she has always dreamed of opening her own bakery. She is also helping with a new family business and working hard to perfect the baked good recipes that will be served at the future cafe. Married daughter Kaylee Knaff, future Crossing Cafe manager at the Mainline Depot, is also going to be an integral part in the development and management of the cafe and coffee shop. Besides being a professional wedding photographer, Kaylee has extensive experience in the food industry and is a skilled barista. The aforementioned daughter, inn operations manager Emily Lehman, had a big hand in drawing the whole family to Iowa to set up shops in Kanawha. LeMay said she was involved in an online group for moms of many young siblings when in 2013 one of the moms cited a retreat at a farm in Iowa. The LeMays were planning a vacation to South Padre Island at the time, but instead ended up going to a colonial-themed retreat in Iowa instead. Emily is our country girl, LeMay said. She is rustic, elegant, and not afraid to get dirty, and works hard. My husband and I made the plans to go to Iowa and stayed at Neiman's farm. Ben immediately knew that he'd found his girl. They were married after a fast courtship and are happy and have five beautiful children. The LeMay's daughter Megan and her husband John Peterson still live in Texas with their six children. The inn's Peterson suite, which is suited for a large family, has been named in their honor. The other suites are named the Langevin Suite, Bachman Suite, and Reinhardt Suite. As inn keeper and hostess, Kathy LeMay may be contacted at the Mainline Inn office telephone number 515-825-7732 or via email at themainlinedepot@gmail.com. Reservations may also be booked on Airbnb. The inn is located at 200 North Main Street in Kanawha in the historic 1900 Farmer State Bank building. Let's look at some letters to the editor. The first is written by Louise Knaff of Forest City. Take your blinders off to what Democrats are doing. Around 200,000 years ago, a man named Jesus was arrested, accused of misleading the nation and stirring up the people. He was brought before the local authorities for questioning, then led out for the riotous crowd, who immediately yelled out, "Crucify him!" And they did. During the past 4+ years, rioters and elected officials accused President Trump of alleged violations against the nation, and the rioters and the half of elected officials yelled out, "Impeach him! Impeach him!" And you did! Now, once again, the same circus is being replayed. I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, comparing Jesus to the now former President Trump. The parallel I draw is the response of the elected demagogue and the rioters. Perhaps not to kill him, but to crush him permanently. What kind of nation have we become for that this attitude and behavior is not only tolerated, but encouraged by elected officials and the general public of the democratic leftists? Now the issue in Cuba, where people want to get rid of Cuba. Get rid of communism. I repeat, get rid of a communistic government. Then there is AOC calling for the U.S. to lift the embargoes from Cuba. As if this is the problem, typical Democrat response, change the subject. How many people understand that the people of Cuba want out of communist rule? That is what the Cuban people are protesting, not the stupid reasons Democrats are raising. If you don't see the writing on the wall or understand what the group think in Washington, I suggest you pull your head out of the sand, take off your blinders, and do some independent thinking. The next article is by Stephen Russell, the next letter to the editor, and he's from Clear Lake. He writes, "Not even Trump is indispensable. It is a known fact, any organization dependent upon one man is bound for failure. So with Trump. Everyone thinks he's so indispensable. not. Find alternatives. Think for yourself. Ridiculous to be mesmerized by him. There must be better people out there among the Republican Party. The next letter to the editor is by Roger W. Smith of Waterloo. He writes, "No Medicare for illegals. According to my friends at Freedom First Action, a project of Center for Freedom and Prosperity, Maryfield, Virginia, left-wing Democrats and radical socialists plan to use Medicare for illegals as their rallying cry to buy special interest support to expand their razor-thin control of Washington, D.C. I have signed a citizen petition to stop Medicare for illegals and returned it with a donation to Freedom First Action, Maryfield, Virginia. That petition will be submitted to any politicians or candidate for office pushing Medicare for illegals." Now we turn to John Skipper's column that he does every Sunday. He retired from the Globe Gazette in February 2018 after 52 years in newspapers, most of that in Mason City. And here's what he writes. "You are selfish if you don't get vaccinated. How many of you have children or grandchildren who are under the age of 12 and therefore cannot be vaccinated yet? How would you feel if your child or grandchild got the COVID disease from someone out there who wasn't vaccinated?" Let's be clear. People who refuse to get the COVID-19 vaccine are among the most selfish people on the face of the earth. They have a whatever will happen attitude with regard to their own health, with little regard for the health of others. The same holds true for people who have refused to wear masks solely because of their own inconvenience. Regarding the shots, there is no shortage of excuses. A recent survey listed the top 6 reasons why people refuse to be vaccinated. 1. The lack of success of the vaccinations. Some people say if the vaccinations are so effective, why are people still dying? The most recent statistics show that the majority of people dying now are people who have not been vaccinated. Another way of putting it, how many lives have been saved by the vaccinations? 2. The COVID-19 virus is not seen as a threat. Many people believe statistics on COVID deaths and illnesses have been exaggerated. For instance, they say patients who are terminally ill in hospitals or nursing homes from other diseases but who get COVID-19 have COVID listed as their cause of death instead of the terminal illness. But even if that is true, even if several thousand causes of death could have been from illnesses other than COVID, how do you dismiss the seriousness of the other 500,000 plus deaths due to COVID? The vaccine sometimes has side effects. Some people who have received 2 shots report soreness in their arm for a day or two, as well as headaches and sluggishness. It seems like a small price to pay to prevent death or serious illness. 4, a lack of trust in medical professionals. As seen early on, many people put more trust in the views of politicians and partisan television personalities than in healthcare professionals and other experts. Next, a lack of trust in government. The thinking is, if politicians support it, there must be something in it for them. And then there's a variety of conspiracy theories. Social media, unfortunately the prime source of information for many Americans, usually comes up with a conspiracy theory of some kind almost every day. Some television commentators make a living at it. People have to decide who to believe, Tucker Carlson or Dr. Anthony Fauci. Hint, Dr. Fauci is not dependent on ratings in his job. I have heard yet another reason why some people refuse to be vaccinated. They believe that God will take care of them one way or another. This is a flimsy religious excuse because it ignores the fact that God also gave us the gift of making choices. If you're walking on a railroad track and a freight train comes roaring toward you, you have the choice to get off the track. How many of you have children or grandchildren who are under the age of 12 and therefore cannot be vaccinated yet? How would you feel if your child or grandchild got the COVID disease from someone out there who wasn't vaccinated? I end where I begin. People who refuse to get the COVID vaccine are among the most selfish people on the face of the earth. Next is the article by J.W. Sales, who's been writing a story about Solomon Stratton, who was an early Mason City pioneer. He writes, "Sol Stratton was a horse whisperer. He had always handled horses expertly and was a skilled saddle maker and horse tack repairer and maker, the perfect match for the needs of the 8th Illinois Volunteer Cavalry Regiment. On July 1, 1861, Solomon Stratton enlisted as a private in the 8th Illinois for a period of 3 years. He served with honor and distinction until being mustered out on December 18, 1863. Carlos Henry Verbeck was appointed 2nd Lieutenant Company Commander of D Company, 8th Illinois Cavalry Regiment, on August 20, 1861, for the duration or until so ordered. He was twice promoted and led his company without interruption until February 1, 1865. Attached to the Army of the Potomac, the 8th Illinois Cav were in the advance of the infantry and fought their first major engagement by opening the Battle of Williamsburg. The orders of battle for the 8th Illinois Cavalry read like a litany of major Civil War engagements: Mechanicsville, Hanover Courthouse, Seven Pines, Brandy Station, Middleburg, Antietam, Upperville, and Gettysburg. Sol Stratton and Carlos Verbeck became friends and brothers during this period, and the written record of their friendship begins during battle while pursuing the 1862 Peninsular Campaign, specifically the Battle of Antietam, the bloodiest single-day battle in U.S. history. On that day, September 16, 1862, Saddlerymen Private Solomon Stratton, on the west bank of Antietam Creek, saved the life of his friend and commander, Lieutenant Carlos Henry Verbeck. Verbeck's mount, a gray-white horse that had been with him since his muster in 1861, was shot out from under him in the heat of that day-long battle. Verbeck repeats the story of Sol Stratton's heroism for the rest of his life. As his mortally wounded horse went down, Verbeck found himself trapped under the thrashing carnage, unable to free himself as the rebels massed on the other side of Antietam Creek. As Company D began to scatter, Sol Stratton crested the West Bank Ridge with a fully saddled and tacked fresh mount, freed Verbeck from his enmeshment, and boosted him into the saddle. Lieutenant Verbeck drew his saber and rallied his men to hold their ground. For the rest of his enlistment, Sol Stratton was Carlos Verbeck's guardian angel. If it can be said that there are times of relative calm in any war, the 8th Illinois found it for a while after Antietam. Providing support for other units and creating picket defense lines allowed for extra time to wonder about life after the rebellion. Carlos Verbeck had been busy sending his father from his home in Downers Grove, Illinois, to the Iowa Land Office in Dubuque, buying up defaulted soldier land grants for Virgin Iowa Prairie. By year-end 1862, Verbeck owned Iowa land in Poweshiek, Floyd, Cerro Gordo, and Worth counties, and 640 acres of old-growth forest in Clearwater County, Minnesota, at Lake Itasca, the default source of the Mississippi River. In nearly 3 months of support duty, the quiet for the 8th Illinois Cavalry abruptly imploded. On December 13, 1862, the Battle of Fredericksburg, Virginia, was launched, and the Union Army of General Ambrose Burnside, 133,000 men, was thrown against the Army of Northern Virginia of Robert E. Lee, 78,500 men. The heavy combat of this major battle devolved into hand-to-hand skirmishes before ending on December 16, 1862. Stratton, Verbeck, and Company D, 8th Illinois, were on the front line from the beginning. It is said that a cavalry union is only as good as their horses, a high praise for the men caring for them, including Sol Stratton. When all was accounted for at the Battle of Fredericksburg, the Confederates dealt the most lopsided battle of the entire war, as the Union lost men at a 4-to-1 ratio, with Lee's army, 4,100 Confederate casualties, to 16,670 Union strategies, casualties. Abraham Lincoln wondered aloud to his cabinet if the war was winnable without raising back black regiments. 2 weeks later, the Emancipation Proclamation was released. Black regiments became a priority to win the war. Next week, Sales will talk about Gettysburg and the journey home to Iowa. Family Week gives everyone a break. No contact period lasts one full week before fall sports start. There is a grind when it comes to being a high school sport athlete, coach, and activities director in the state of Iowa. With multiple sports in each weather season, finding time to relax can be challenging at times, and on many occasions feel impossible. Until Sunday, July 25th, that is the official start date of the first Family Week introduced by Iowa High School Athletic Association. It has been talked about for a long time, but finally incorporated this year, Waterloo West Activities Director and Head Girls Basketball Coach Dr. Anthony Pappas said. Tom Keating, now the head of the association, was one of the main drivers of this, and he felt it was very important. He pushed for it. It will be treated as a no-contact period that starts on Sunday and will run through the first day in August. The state baseball tournament, slated to start on Monday for Class 1A and 2A in Carroll and for 3A and 4A kicking off on Wednesday in Iowa City, are exempt this year. Starting with the unified 21-22 athletic calendar, the state baseball tournament's start dates will be adjusted to accommodate with Family Week. This will provide a built-in break for everyone involved in Iowa high school athletics, participants, parents, coaches, officials, and school administrators, an opportunity to prioritize family, friends, rest, and activities away from sports. Well, everybody, we have reached the end of today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for July 25th. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy V. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.